One of the meanings of the Sanskrit word saha is to endure, to go patiently through hardships without rebelling. Sahanamu. Saha means the process of enlightenment has always been held as an unquestionably painful process. This enlightenment comes only after disillusionment about the permanency of objects and relationships we have somehow got involved with. Sahaja, therefore, would mean that which arises from enduring the suffering process, accepting everything as a gift of God. The attitude of taking miseries and blessings for our good is cultivated only through assiduous practice, and this obviously is not a gift which many seekers somehow feel they are entitled to. Because this is one of the constant wins of many of the Vyasis. They will say, sir, give me that, please bless us with that condition of even taking this. Enable me to take the pains. You are not prepared to put up with it. It's a very peculiar request many Abhyasis have got. This habit they have to cultivate. It is not something that God will give. Give that habit, sir. It will not. We have to learn that. This is to get which many seekers somehow feel they are entitled to. Genuine spiritual life and progress in the same has never been popular and never will be, because most people are unwilling to open and to accept pain. I find master's greatness from a very practical angle is the acknowledgement of pain or suffering or misery in life and sharing his agony and pain. This was the first noble truth of Lord Buddha. This acknowledgement of pain and suffering as a truth of life is a fundamental to spiritual growth. That these sufferings arise out of desires and wishes is a knowledge one gains in the process of spiritual development. Master says, there are miseries all around for the embodied one. Even then, we remain so much attached to the body that this thing does not forsake us up to the end, and we even wish to be born again. It matters little that the wish is for being born in a prosperous home or in a royal family. Since as soon as the name, individualized existence has arisen, my brethren, misery would start in however subtle mould it might be cast. For any sadhaka, it is obvious that our pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses or covers as a veil our understanding. It is quite conceivable that not only is pain a necessary aspect of the spiritual process, but that to consciously enter into and experience suffering is the doorway to a more profound understanding of reality, something to even be sought after. That is what Master said, it is good to be put to worries. The home is a training center for submission and endurance. To put up patiently with the day-to-day events of life is the highest form of penance and sacrifice. So instead of anger and resentment, one must cultivate in himself a meek temperament. Meekness refers to that feeling of mind in which, on being rebuked by others, one feels his own self to be at fault, and for which he has to yield to what is meted out to him. For others, aloofness, solitude, dissociation might be the means for cultivating contentment, endurance and freedom from the entanglements of life. Whereas for us, to put up with the taunts and rebukes of the family, friends and society is the greatest form of penance and sacrifice. In fact, in spirituality, we understand, of course, a very painful process that the things which we considered as pain and that which we considered as cruel and demonic is in fact the very thing that is the very door of liberation. These are the thorns that lead us to the flowers of the garden, as Master puts it. When we feel ourselves to be the doer, difficulty comes in the way. Of course, thistles and thorns also bear beautiful flowers which please the eye and fill the heart with joy. Even so, in case God is a flower of his own tree, we enjoy God and not the tree to that extent. There is in reality no other way out. The circumstances that we consider as generating pain in us, in fact, only generates heat, and that is felt as pain. It is heat of reality that is not pleasant to the uninitiated in spirituality. Initiation, in fact, actually involves the process of inviting pain through the most supreme consciousness of humility in accepting the will of Master in every walk of life. As Master put it to me once, the process of initiation starts from the aspirant, and the process of giving diksha by the gurus is a farce and many times a fraud. In fact, all mental processes that we have in the states of mudra, kshipta, vikshipta, ekagravritti and samadhan, there is always a point of heat, and we experience that as pain or restlessness. It may be surprising to some that I have included in the painful process even the state of samadhan or settledness. In the path to infinity, there arises a condition when we move on, even after the state of peace, to a state of restlessness in peace. Master puts it, as many a man must have had a taste of the condition of peace, let us now taste the former, for a spark of which one might be ready to forego 1,000 states of peace and calmness. This is in fact the foundation of the entire structure which brings forth the rare personalities into the world. My revered father used to say that this is another dawn. It is the place where reality is coming up above the horizon, where it is at dawn, and that very dawn becomes our point of orientation. The point to understand is that Master is in fact not asking us to seek suffering, but is saying that we have to look for the heat. This is what was sought to be explained by him in his first commandment. And this of course gets understood only by those who are blessed with the condition of that heat at dawn, a heat that is not that of the celestial star sun, but that of reality. That is the heat of activity nearer the center or thumb. The state becomes totally unattainable without going through suffering and pain. We learn that pain is the greatest great teacher or guru, who through the lessons of tolerance and fortitude and gaira teaches us to appreciate and love the heat of reality. For those who are not advanced but yet get glimpses of the condition obtaining in the central region, it is common to feel the uncomfortable feeling in the occipital prominence. In a reasonably successful person, there is a huge area of self-satisfaction, and so far so good. But then, when difficulties and miseries engulf him, there develops an area where there is a crack in the door of the ego. And it is through that crack alone does the bright light come, and it is not all that pleasant in the beginning. It is in fact very irritating. Slowly, when the cracks increase and more light starts pouring in through the crevices in the ego, we start learning to look for the same with eagerness, and are in fact wait for such light beams as may drown us. From this state we learn that the light is really inviting us to find our way out, and we find the doors of the ego are now open to go yonder. This is one of the most important lessons in sadhana, to look for the crack in the shell of the ego, where there is a bright light coming through. It is too bright, and it is irritating, and it is painful, but that is the way out. If we do not do this exercise ourselves, the masters help us making the cracks bigger and larger through lessons that are equally painful to learn and understand. Many miss the opportunities provided thus because the thickness and roughness of their shells. Thus, the very thing that spiritual aspirants as well as other people should seek but tend to avoid is the exit path of light that is thrown open through the crevices and cracks in the shell of ego. Paradoxically, this is what everyone desperately claims to want to locate. In the practice of PAM, the experience of light is not uncommon, even for the beginners. This is had by just sitting with an open mind, waiting for the divine light to find its way through the ego shell. It does come, we know. In the process, all the dirt and unwholesome ideas and desires are basically thrown up. Instead of keeping quiet, we seem to run in search of our broom to sweep them away. They are inconvenient and unpleasant, but they are ours, and we should learn to sit quiet in their midst and in fact live through it. This pain in meditation and in real life is something we should stoically endure. When Master said Be unmindful of the thoughts that arise during meditation and treat them as uninvited guests. He was asking us to develop this attitude of tolerance to our own mistakes and follies, which fry up through the crevices in our ego structure during meditation. When Master said that in the past saints sought for pain as against the present day attitude of shunning it, he was emphasizing the fact that this pain is so crucial to one's spiritual understanding that if one is not in touch with it, their practice should be intentionally look for and relate to the pain in any situation. When pain is understood as a means to develop humility, which in turn makes us remember the Master, so long as the pain persists, it becomes something that we earnestly seek for. Only then it gets treated as a gift from the God. Such an awareness of the pain as a blessing is what the Master was emphasizing in the fifth commandment. It may be surprising if I were to say that in our tradition, pain is the vanguard of enlightenment. Pain is the ego's response to reality. This should be understood well, and the lives of the Masters are a lesson for us to contemplate and understand this basic truth. However, if our life is in an environment that is 90% happiness and 1% pain, we should know that the pain actually represents reality to us and the happiness the illusion in life. The pain is what we need to look for and find. If our meditations are disturbing, it is really helping us to search for reality. If, however, it is always satisfying, we should know we are stuck and we should find out how we can become restless. We should understand the content of consciousness during meditations and in other situations and be aware of the whole context and should not try to perpetuate the blissful or peaceful condition. We may have to actually relate to the pain in the bliss. This is the call for the condition of non-peace peace about which Master talks so much. It is our experience that there is no perfect happiness, even in a so-called bliss state, and there is always a shadow. I know that every time I have experienced something like bliss, there was at least the fear or apprehension of losing it somewhere on the periphery of that experience. I have learned to pay a lot of attention to the shadows in such situations. I was in and always yielded to the Master in the most submissive manner. It is not because of any masochistic tendency to torture myself, but because such a shadow represents the earth, that is the ground. No one can ever manage his own shadow, and there lies the need to surrender. We find that pain is not only the way out, but the way in and down. That is the reason thinkers like Plato have asked us not to look up the screen to which the light is getting projected, where we see our own shadows, but to turn back to the sun from whom the light is emanating. Such a sun is what we have in our Master, and we should turn towards him and not the shadows. Otherwise, our spiritual life can easily become imbalanced and fixated at a certain point if the bright aspect of truth or God is not balanced with its shadow aspect. In the story of Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas of Mahabharata, we see her knowing the value of contemplating on her own misery, which brings balance and humility to the exalted states of communion with the Lord, and in the end, abundance, prosperity that is just and due to her. This is the most important lesson that we gain from experiencing our meditations, the knowledge of oneself and the cause of our bondages leading to misery. It is then we understand that all the favors which Master has granted us are invariably enwrapped in the knowledge of the emptiness of our faculties compared with the abundance which our psyche experienced. Thus we recognize our own lowliness and misery, which in the time of our prosperity we were unable to comprehend. When this humility and lowliness of our being is experienced, then the sweetness and pleasures of meditation and prayer are found to give us some degree of strength in our connection with Master. In fact, Master then appears to desire to lead us further, wherein we can commune with him more intimately and abundantly. It is in such a poverty of ego that we commune, and we are thrown into circumstances where there is a play of great pleasures, and we fool ourselves that we are then having the divine favor shining most brightly upon us. We find that Master has in fact set us down into darkness, and I shut the door to the springs of divine nectar which we were tasting in the company of the Master, whenever and as long as we desire. The pain that God gives is His gift and not His curse, as it is so often felt to be. This clinging to the Master is not an eternal feature of our spiritual life. Once we have learned the lessons that poverty teaches, and humility is firmly established, we become capable of managing ourselves. The sadhaka then earns the privilege of being placed down from the safe arms of communion with Master, and this is the stage of Prapanna Prabhu. The communion is available, yet one feels one knows the mind of the Master in such a way he finds it easy to perform without permission. One cannot have a full spiritual life if one has not come to terms with pain. Life is painful anyway. Pain can be temporarily evaded or drugged or resisted, but it cannot ultimately be avoided. There is pain in neurotic suffering, which is the way we ordinarily think of pain, and there is also pain of suffering for Master or suffering with humanity. They are very different types of suffering, but both are suffering, and whereas neurotic suffering only perpetuates itself, suffering for Master or enlightened suffering serves all of humanity. Many harbor the belief that in order to serve humanity, one must know humanity. In fact, one needs to know the divinity to serve humanity. This is an important aspect of life that tends to be neglected by all. By realizing the potentiality for divinity in every human being, we attend to the task of developing the divine resource in humanity. Verily, in that lies the solution to the problem of human beings, almost living in continuous warfare, conflict and strife. We need to explore great depths of suffering and the causes thereof, so that the problem of life is squarely dealt. That is what Master taught. The Master said, many of the associates write to me about their troubles and want me to remove them. To them, as also to others, I would say that the trouble reminds us of its silent stage. We get comfort in the state of discomfort. We remember it when its opposite is there. In this way, we develop forbearance and a little bit of peace also. Our sufferings are due to the binds that we have in the various planes of our existence. We have the divine realm of love, and that is our plus point. We need to strengthen the same. We also have the human realm, which comprises of jealousy, hatred, and host of other negative intentions. We have the realm of the animal, the hungry ghost realm, and possibly a hell realm too. The full range of human experience is included in such realms. All civilizations so far have only tried to explore the realms other than the divine all these ages, and we are still exploring them. The more we explored into the non-divine realms, the more we have ourselves got exposed to the dangers of those realms, and we have as if put a time bomb on our pockets to annihilate ourselves. The modern day phenomenon of human time bombs just to seek satisfaction of hatred and animosity are only a tip of the iceberg. This type of suffering grants no spiritual lessons unless we remember the pledge of our Master that the things will change for the better, and He is there to ensure human progress into the divine realms. The limits of human degradation need to be known and felt before a conscious decision is taken to change for the better, and that is quite a lesson for us to learn. We have to go through all of these experiences in order to be helpful to other people. We need to know the limits of suffering and also the limits of endurance. Then only we can claim a certain amount of eligibility to help others. If we are resistant to suffering, what endurance can we teach to others? If we were looking for some kind of state of mind, call it state of bliss only, and do not know anything of the suffering during and after meditation, we will be least fitted for a serious study of the states of meditation and consequent exercises in impermanence. If someone were to ask me, have you ever been in the state of confusion, struggling with lower order mental vrittis, my answer would be, of course. If anyone further asked me, what did you do then, my answer would be, try to stay there, ignoring all the thoughts than the divine light, which anyway was not there. I understood that attitude is staying with reality, whatever it might be. I have a lesson learnt there, and if I can be settled in such a state, I can be in any other place and any circumstance. To remain fixed on the thought of the divine light when we are bombarded with impulses emanating from the lower animal and ghost realms of consciousness are tough. This suffering is the worst mental plane suffering that we learn to endure with the help of the pranahuti in our system. But that does not by itself nullify the suffering, and in fact we learn to appreciate and evaluate the spectrum of suffering we have and thereby develop a stoic attitude along with the development of faith in the master. The lesson that is taught in such a suffering during meditation is to be in the thought of the master, the only thing that is to be learned. We learn very few things that really matter. We need to learn only to be with our master, as he wills, not as we will. It is really all the grace of master that such experiences are given. That it is felt by us as pain or suffering is our reaction to the heat of such learning. In all this he reveals a part of himself, and sometimes we are allowed to witness a little bit of it, a peep into it, but most of the time nothing that we understand. Mostly it would be too difficult to make sense of such suffering, which is certain times border on agony and anguish. While reviewing our pettiness in our behavior, thinking and attitudes and treatments to fellow beings, and hanging our heads in shame, we find still the presence of the master there. While we ourselves loathe to live, there is so much of love, so much of intimacy, and then we wake up after the meditation. That presence of the master that is experienced helps us to go to work and attend to whatever we have to do that day. It is often funny that when we get too far in this path and live in a state of constant remembrance where the master's presence is felt, we get a knock at the door and we are given a tax bill that needs to be cleared immediately. We are also ordinary human beings who live in the world with all the limitations of this world. During meditations, experiences, we are so free, it is so limitless, and here the concrete world poses problems that are not always easy to tackle. We learn that impatience does not work, and stoic attitude alone saves the situation. Problems have a knack of getting solved on their own, and few realize this. Or more appropriately, it is time that heals all wounds and solves all problems. If the situation is totally helpless, all that we should do is to be helpless. We need to stand naked before God, Master, and he knows what to do. Many sadhakas entertain an idea that with the spiritual life there will be an increase in the amount of happy experiences and a decrease in the amount of unhappy experiences in life. Most often it is the other way about. In fact, there is nothing like happy and unhappy experiences. For a sincere seeker, the difference is in the way in which he lives those experiences. In such cases, the whole mental sphere is oriented to the master and no concern for self and its pains and pleasures. The roots of pain then remind us of the master as also the result, the flowers. The pain then is no torture and the fragrance is no pleasure. In such a state of balance, and not only in such a state, we can say that the fragrance of the flowers of the Chit Lake, which is turned towards the divine always, is experienced. Thank you.